Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. Have you gotten people to accuse you of being too much of a Giannis stan, to being a little in too deep into Giannis Inc., or is that just me? Because I've had some people who say, come on, guys, pump the brakes a little bit. You stand for this guy a little too hard.
Look, it's a completely fair accusation. Anyone who wants to levy that charge at me, I'm guilty, okay? It is what it is. I accept it. But no, I have never had anybody take me to task for my Giannis thoughts.
Well, that's good. Let's hope it doesn't happen, Andrew, because I'm about to ramp it up for the new season, okay? I am absolutely disgusted with how the NBA schedule makers treated Giannis, our rising hero. They put him on a road game against Charlotte in one of the, you know, the scenarios. Like, if you're trying to have a showcase for one of your best players, having him on the road in Charlotte is not the way you showcase him. But do you know what Giannis did, Andrew?
What?
Giannis rose to the occasion. He put up 18 and 8 assists in like 35 minutes. So it's not like Jason Kidd was out there playing up 48 minutes, you know, getting desperate. Mike Budenholzer's got him in that nice little role, 35 minutes. He's got him playing center at times, just like we were, you know, hoping for the last 2 years. They got just enough contributions from the Ersan Ilyasovas of the world. Of course, Chris Middleton, you know, played like a superstar, like always. Like I've been telling you, he's been playing for multiple seasons. And the Bucks get out to a dramatic late game victory. They're undefeated to start the season, Andrew. And I just love Giannis's resolve. You know, he gets snubbed by the league schedule makers here in this atrocious fashion. But what does he do? He puts his head down. He goes to work. He doesn't hold out like some of his fellow superstars. He doesn't demand a trade. He just does the work. And that's why we're ramping up Giannis Inc. in 2019 to even greater heights.
It's going to be a big year for our Giannis stock. There's no question about it. Look, we're recording this on a Thursday afternoon because of scheduling concerns and logistical kind of difficulties that we've had. So we're doing this before the Lakers. We'll save Lakers thoughts for next week. And we're just going to go through some of the games that happened in these first few days here. And yeah, I do want to start with Bucks Hornets. And granted, it's almost a parody of like basketball blogger nonsense to come away from opening night in the NBA raving about Bucks Hornets on League Pass. But that game was awesome. And honestly, you're kind of underselling the first half for Milwaukee because it was like a religious experience. And,
right?
And Coach Bud really did take all of our advice from the last year and a half. He clearly is a member of Open Floor Globe. And the Bucks looked amazing. And then credit to the Hornets, a team that I really have not thought much about over the last couple years. They showed a lot of heart. Kemba was awesome. I think he finished with like 41. Malik Monk, we'll address Malik Monk in a second, but like everybody on Charlotte fought back, and that game came down the wire. It was really entertaining.
Well, I do want to have one clarification. I'm not sure that Coach Bud has any idea who we are, but I but I do think that the Bucks fans out there that have listened to us, they were regularly like tagging the children of the Bucks ownership group with our takes our thoughts. And so I actually want to give the credit to whichever one of like the children over there, like the disciples, the heirs to the future thrones of those you know, Wall Street billionaires, was able to convince Dad to go out and hire Coach Bud. That's the person who deserves all the credit for this. It's going to be so much fun. And
well,
it took 35 minutes for me to regret not picking Giannis for MVP. 35 game minutes. I'm so ashamed of myself.
It does feel like that's where we're headed. I'm a little worried that the Giannis MVP buzz is peaking too early. And in this case, it's peaking way too early. It's fucking October.
Give him the award, Andrew. It's his. He earned
it. We need to be a little careful. I will say, I do remember people tagging our podcasts and articles that I wrote, tagging Alex Lazary, who's the son of Mark Lazary, co-owner of the Bucks, And I did not like that. That made me uncomfortable. But whatever it was, now they look got at the message.
Look at the fruits of our labors. Look, it's not fun to tag when you're going through like the farming process. But once all the food comes out, you're pretty happy. You're going to eat it, aren't you? This is incredible. This is the greatest thing we've ever done. If he's listening, we're going to have plenty of thoughts about the rotation as the season unfolds. So we can just get that straight to the coaching staff. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I'm very happy for Bucks fans. One of the other things that I really enjoyed from that first half was seeing the various people that I've followed on Bucks Twitter for the last few years come out of the woodwork to say, do you see what we were talking about with Jason Kidd last year? And I honestly, God, I hope that happens during every Bucks game for the next 3 months, because it's true. They were handicapped in like five different ways by that coaching staff the last few years, and it's going to be fun to see them unleashed this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's also just a good example of like, if you're not on the latest and greatest of basketball strategy, you are going to get mocked relentlessly these days. And just Kidd's offense just wasn't. And you look at the stark difference just in terms of shot selection. Where are they getting their shots from? The number of three-pointers was spiking up during the entire preseason. They take 34 three-pointers in their debut game. They basically have erased the tough twos or the ugly twos from their offense. They got to the free throw line a ton. Obviously, Giannis should be living on the free throw line. And then the lineups they played to give Giannis the space to work, but then also to just keep the floor balanced in ways that it wasn't in the past. It all came together. And it would have been such a backbreaker, by the way, if Kemba had just made that layup and the Bucks had lost that game. Like, so I'm also happy for the Bucks fans that they escaped that, because that would have been a real gut punch.
Well, yeah, it was a win for us too, because God knows we wanted to come on here and open with a bunch of Bucks hyperbole, and thankfully they hung on there at the end. I will say, it was a little concerning watching the offense in the fourth quarter. They still seem like they're kind of short a creator, and Eric Bledsoe can't quite fill that role, and Giannis in the half court at the end of games is still not quite what you would want. But they've got 7 months to work on that. And hey, you know what? I was pretty hard on their wings on the Eastern Conference preview. I was hard on a lot of people. But Dante DiVincenzo looked okay last night. That was a step in the right direction, and more contributions from him than I expected to see in like the first 4 months.
No question. Okay, I think we've talked for long enough about Bucks Hornets.
and Dante DiVincenzo.
We have to go to the Hornets side, right? Didn't you get some heckling about Malik Monk?
I did, okay? And so we're starting here with a tweet from Matt Moore, a.k.a. HP Basketball.
Slow down. Before you read it, though, Andrew, I don't want this to turn into the apology hour, okay? I was listening back to our previews, and you were starting to apologize right off the top for some Trae Young takes and all this stuff, and it just kills me when you apologize for things you shouldn't apologize for. So keep that mentality, okay? Have that strong backbone here.
Yes, I was only apologizing for take negligence, okay? It wasn't that big of a deal. But Matt Moore last night in the middle of the fourth quarter tweeted, Malik Monk with 18 points, including 4 of 8 from three-point range, CC Andrew Sharp.
Ooh, and called out. Yeah. Called out on Twitter. Oh.
And I deserve it, man. I have a couple follow-ups to our East preview, but first and foremost, apologies to Malik Monk. I believe I called him unplayable on the East pod, and I immediately regretted it. Like, we finished recording, and I saw a highlight of him on Twitter, and it's not just that I was wrong, because you and I are wrong all the time, but
speak for yourself.
Malik Monk, though, is just such a perfect microcosm of everything I want from a basketball player and basketball in general. And I knew that when he was coming into the draft, and I knew that even when I mentioned him on the podcast last week, and I totally betrayed him. I betrayed myself and my principles, and so apologies to Malik Monk, because look, he looked pretty awesome last night too. That was welcome sign.
If he was from Seattle, you would already own an authentic jersey of his. You know, I mean, he's a bucket getter. He's exactly what you're looking for.
Exactly.
I don't think you were necessarily wrong to say he was like borderline unplayable as a rookie, but I think it's just a lesson here that second year guys who struggled as not all rookies hit the ground running, right? And so you should expect to see big jump from the second year players. And there's a whole bunch of second year guys. I'd put Lonzo in that category. I would put De'Aaron Fox, who actually had a pretty nice opening night, in that category too. I'd say Jonathan Isaac belongs in that category. There's a bunch of these second year players who got overshadowed by Tatum and Mitchell just balling out as rookies, who are very intriguing and could be, you know, difference-making type players for their respective teams.
For sure. And it's a reminder that most guys who come into the league at 19 years old take a couple years before they have a chance of really contributing. And last year, we were watching more exceptions than the rule.
And, well, Andrew, look, we're in our 30s. It took us 3 years to figure out how to do a podcast, right? So let's not be too hard on Malik Monk for needing, you know, 12 months to get his sea legs, right?
Exactly. Everyone needs a little time. In general, before we move on, do you feel any better about the outlook for the Hornets this year? Because I was pretty surprised by how much life they showed in that first game. And I do think that they could maybe push for the eighth seed this year.
I mean, Kemba had 41 and they lost. So I'm not like how many 41s are you getting from Kemba? I guess that's one question I had. Look, I thought that Borrego, like you're saying, there was a good flow to everything that they were doing. They played hard. They came out on opening night. It was a little bit less depressing than some past seasons. But
yeah,
there was also still just question marks up and down in terms of their lineups. And there's such a huge burden on Kemba that, you know, to me, pushing to the playoffs with this group seems unlikely. Do I think they're going to be pitiful? No.
Yeah, I just expected the Hornets team from the first half to be the Hornets team we were watching all year, the team that just gets drilled by like 25 against the Bucks, and they showed me something in that second half. The other thing I would add, and this probably doesn't apply to anybody who didn't watch this random Bucks-Hornets game, but the Hornets jerseys, the pinstripes are cool, but wearing pinstripes with solid shorts doesn't really work for me. And they had that the honeycomb on the court. There was just like too much action to try and process for a viewer at home.
It's like when they, you know, video games sometimes like let you design your own thing and then you just make every selection. You're like, exactly. I want this. And when you throw it all together, it's just terrible. Yeah, I thought it was
rough.
It
turns into like an optical illusion or something.
No, but thanks for the detailed fashion advice. I know a lot of people call you Madison Avenue Sharp. But I was going to say, pinstripes are back. I mean, Charlotte and then Orlando's, to me, looked really, really clean. I don't know if you've gotten to see those. The font might be a little bit like G-rated, like just like appealing to kids, you know, a little too Disney inspired. Yeah. But I mean, it's great to see those baby blue, you know, mid-90s throwbacks back out there.
Yeah, and it's not a coincidence that two teams who don't have much else to sell but 90s nostalgia are leaning into it. So congrats to the Hornets and Magic. The Magic looked okay last night too. But first, Jeff says, Andrew, I'm not a Raptors fan, but I had to play back your thoughts on their team on the last podcast to make sure I heard it correctly. You said that Fred VanVleet is the only player they have that is any good. And here, Ben, I am not going to apologize for my actual analysis because good. I stand by the idea that every Raptor except Fred VanVleet is 10 to 15% overrated. But I do apologize just generally for the caustic tone I adopted as that preview podcast
went on. That was the best segment you've delivered maybe in 3 or 4 months. I mean, it was like a solid 5-minute rant of Andrew Sharp reports. I kind of blacked out halfway through because I was so excited that you were finally being honest and taking, you know, hard stances for once. It was brilliant. I don't know how many of the points you made are going to hold up. Like, it might not be your finest hour, but you were ruthless. It was fantastic.
Oh, man.
This is why you shouldn't apologize.
Yeah, I had not eaten. It had been a pretty long week. I had a friend coming into town that I needed to go pick up, and it was just not a good situation at the end of that podcast. But we got one guy. Did you see the person who sent in the 3,000-word email that included an annotated transcript of our Celtics and Raptors segments?
Oh, I read every word. I mean, I cherish these emails. No, I mean, I can't tell you that I saw that. But I think what you just meant to say was, Fred VanVleet's the only player on the Raptors you like. And to me, that's not a hot take. I think of these like top tier teams, I think you often tap into the Houston Rockets' unlikability. To me, the Raptors are right there in terms of unlikability. Like, if you had to rank these top teams in terms of who you'd really want to watch and like rally around, the Raptors group's pretty low. I mean, I definitely would have Boston, Philly, Golden State above them, Utah way above them. And, you know, you might have said that everybody sucked when you meant to say they weren't fun to root for. But that's okay. You're just parsing at this point, right?
Yeah. Well, I would qualify even what you said. I think I agree that they're not fun to root for. A bunch of those guys on a personal level are probably great to talk to. So they're likable in that sense, but not necessarily the most fun bunch to, like, get fired up for. But news for you, Ben, I had my fantasy basketball draft this week, and guess who is headlining my squad?
Oh, I don't know if I can be excited. Should I be excited or disappointed by this revelation?
Kawhi Leonard, I don't know. It's up to you.
God, I can't be your fan anymore. Come on, man. I can't cheer for your fantasy basketball team. Well, who else do you have?
A bunch of guys. It's funny. I was prepared to trade.
Very cool. A bunch of guys. You have no idea. Do you even have a team, or did you just draft Kawhi Leonard?
I was prepared to trade literally anyone on my team for Giannis. My number one, my number two, whatever it took to get him. But my best friend got the number one pick, and I'm pretty sure half of his enjoyment from playing fantasy basketball is just screwing with me. So there's no way he's ever going to trade me Giannis. And he listens to the pod, too, so like he knows who my guys are. He also took Josh Hart. Whole thing is very upsetting.
What's his name?
Tim.
Tim, I'm now a fan of yours. I'm rooting for you to take down Sharp, to have Giannis win the MVP, to have Giannis get the most fantasy points in the entire league. And whatever you do, do not trade Giannis to Andrew under any circumstances. Let's really drive this home. Let's really extract maximum pain from this season.
Yeah, man. Look, for better or worse, it's me and Kawhi from here on out. We're going on this ride together, Toronto. What'd you think of the Raptors?
Well, they're even more unlikable now they've got you on the bandwagon. No, I thought they were fine. They didn't really impress me that much. But look, I'm pretty low on Cleveland, like we talked about.
Yeah.
I thought you give, what, Kawhi B+, A-, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe an A, all things considered. I mean, if you're giving him, like, you know, if you're, I guess, hesitant or maybe expecting that not the world's greatest effort right out of the gate from a guy who hasn't played a lot of basketball over these last 18 months, I would say it was a gigantic win, right?
Yeah, and that would be my takeaway, is like he's clearly invested and going hard. There's still some rust there, but it's got to be pretty encouraging to watch what he is right now if you assume that a month or two from now he's going to be a little bit more fluid offensively. And yeah, look, that team is going to be awesome in the regular season. I think we're going to learn a lot more from Celtics-Raptors Friday night. I'm pretty excited about that game. But they're in good shape, you know? They've got Fred VanVleet, so what do you need?
Yeah, I just didn't think that there was, you know, anything that revelatory. I mean, he plugged in pretty smoothly. Their offense looked really good. I didn't think very many teams played much defense through the first 2 days. That might be one of my just general takeaways, but it seemed like everybody got numbers. And, you know, for the most part, like the offense was ahead of the defense in terms of, you know, execution and firepower. And we definitely saw that from, you know, Toronto putting up, you know, big numbers in their first game out. But, you know, it's Cleveland. Come on. I think you're right. Like, let's hold off not only on judging the Raptors, but I think also judging the Sixers until we see what that Celtics-Raptors game looks like. Because I think in Celtics-Sixers, there was, you know, two simultaneous narratives. It was either like, oh, Philly doesn't have anybody besides their main two guys, and they're really shallow. But then simultaneously, it's like, well, Boston's just a super team. So, like, what do you want to do about it, right? And I think so we're going to have a better idea on which one of those narratives we should, you know, fully believe in, and perhaps both within the next week or two.
Well, listen, man, get in the spirit, okay? We're here to overreact. I'm not here for your wait and see, half-assing it. But moving on, Angelo, we'll just hit a bunch of quick hitters here. Angelo says, is Karl Towns the Carmelo Anthony of big men? What do you think, Ben?
I mean, at least Melo gets his shots up. So I don't know. I don't know if I see that. I mean, it was a puzzling debut from Towns. I mean, he fouls out in what, 22 minutes. I kept thinking that he was being punished. Like every time I would switch back to that game, he wouldn't be in. Like he was just long stretches of that game. He just wasn't even on the court. You know, San Antonio wins that game through their sort of dull competence, you know, and Aldridge puts up gigantic numbers. So I wasn't really surprised by the result. But if this was supposed to be Towns' team and Jimmy was upset about that, there's no one in that building would be like, oh, yeah, the Timberwolves are definitely Towns' team.
Yeah, I mean, we're all rooting for Towns to have that moment where he asserts himself and kind of establishes that he's the cornerstone and he's the reason to have hope for the future, and it's just not happening. It doesn't even have to happen on the court. It could be giving a great interview to Rachel Nichols where you're like, wow, that's a guy I believe in, and he's just been kind of meek throughout this whole thing, and it's a little depressing. The Melo comparison, though, I'm surprised you didn't mention it. That's something you had said to me offline like a year ago, and I think we decided that it was too mean to say on the podcast, but I do kind of see it. It came up when we were comparing the like unicorn big men to the banana boat, and I forget who our other comparisons were, but Cat as Melo really is kind of tough to argue with.
Yeah, I don't want to overreact to that first game in terms of like where his defense is going to be at, because I was hearing from an emailer who had some, you know, insider knowledge about Towns' offseason, and he says that Towns put in a lot of work on the defensive end. So
yeah,
I'm excited to see that. Tough matchup against San Antonio because they're like truly traditional and big. And, you know, that's sort of his weakness in terms of a matchup standpoint. But there's no question his offense is way ahead of his defense overall. He's incredibly talented. He has the ability to put up 40 on any given night as long as he's in rhythm and getting lots of touches and doing his thing. Those are all Melo-like qualities. You know, I do worry, though, just like I used to say Melo was a bystander to his own reality, isn't Towns like the ultimate bystander to his own reality right now? Like,
that's definitely what's happening, and it's frustrating to watch because he has more talent than anyone on that team. He can dominate, and for whatever reason, it happened. Last night was like a continuation of his performance against the Rockets in last year's playoffs, where you can blame Tibbs, and he probably deserves it. You can blame Jimmy Butler, but also it's like Towns, like, just go get the ball and be awesome because he has it in him, and that's what's it's hard to watch.
I just also liked how you were setting up Rachel Nichols as, like, the Switzerland, like, negotiator here, where, like, Jimmy goes to talk to Rachel, Carl talks to Rachel in your eyes, and then maybe somehow they're able to kind of piece it all together.
That's pretty good. I feel like everyone in the NBA or like the entire roster of All-Stars from last year has talked to Rachel Nichols within the last month or 6 weeks. So she's clearly the go-to person. And I don't know, man. Schedule an interview, Kat. I think that's the move.
Yeah, or an intervention. But hey, can I say that we have to give credit to Adidas? You know, I'm always out here, you know, checks over stripes, but Adidas making the decision.
You sound like a 15-year-old boy.
It's all right. Adidas made the decision to basically not re-sign Wiggins. Mm-hmm. That is shrewd management, right? Adidas has had some weird decisions over the years, like with their roster. But yeah, Wiggins is absolutely a guy that you could have continued to talk yourself into as a shoe company. Like, let's get a Wiggins like signature model that would never sell, and you would constantly be waiting for him to kind of break through. No real point to this other than, you know, congratulations, Adidas.
Yeah, that was a little too mean. We should probably delete that from the podcast. But also, Adidas was due for that kind of decision because they've paid a lot of money to Derrick Rose. If you look at their roster, like
Dwight Howard,
bleak.
Like, yeah, they've had some real misses over the years. That's what I'm saying. And I thought Wiggins was just like right in that, you know, track to be the next like huge. Hey, guess what? Adidas gave him $300 million, you know, something like that. And thankfully, that did not happen.
All right, and we will keep it moving. But first, Ben, today's episode is brought to you by Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, options, cryptos, All of it is commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just rich people. It's a non-intimidating way to get into the stock market if you're a newcomer, to invest for the first time with true confidence. And it's simple and intuitive. The design is clear. The data is presented in an easy-to-digest way. Tell me about your experience with Robinhood, Ben.
Well, everything you just mentioned sounded great, but you left out one of the most important points, which is Robinhood does not charge commission fees like lots of other brokerages. If you ever tried to trade stocks, Andrew, they're always trying to take money off the top, straight out of your pocket. They want $10 for every trade you make. And if you're one of these people who likes to wheel and deal constantly, that adds up. Robinhood, nope. No commission fees. It's unbelievable. You get to keep all of your profits. You mentioned the charts and the market data. I mean, you're just tapping around on your smartphone, getting access to everything you need. I know you put a lot of research time into your fantasy basketball team. Why don't you put that same time, Andrew, into making some money on the stock market? I bet you would be surprised at what you'd be capable of doing. I feel a little guilty having spent more than a month of my life every year, you know, doing research for the top 100 list. What if I had just done the top 100 stocks, Andrew? I'd probably be in a better place right now.
It would definitely be a better investment of time and energy. And look, any listeners out there, if you're looking to dabble in the market and support the podcast at the same time, Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at floor.robinhood.com. That's floor.robinhood.com.
Floor.robinhood.com. Andrew, they're giving away some blue chip stocks too, aren't they?
Yeah, that's big time. All right, let's get back into it. Art says, was Anthony Davis right when he said he is the best player in the world? I don't know, Ben.
We answer this question, Andrew. We have the list called the top 100, okay? The guys can think what they think, but the top 100, it's sacred, right? That's our holy text.
Right.
Anthony Davis is not number one, so therefore the answer is simply no.
He looked really, really good against Houston, and it's going to be straight. The Pelicans in general, everybody on that team looked great. I mean, we've spent the last 3 months side-eyeing the Elfrid Payton acquisition, but he looked really solid too.
Yeah, stop right there though. We'll get back to the Pelicans and how good they look, because everyone balled out on their entire roster.
Yeah.
But I need to call upon an Andrew Sharp Reports segment here regarding this game. Now, Houston opening night at home, they lose 131 to 112. Harden was 6 for 15, a minus 23. Mello was a minus 20 in 27 minutes. Mm-hmm. Michael Carter-Williams was playing real minutes. I need the Andrew Sharp Reports take. How bad is it in Houston? Will they make the playoffs? And do you see them winning a playoff series this year? Like, just give us the free rein take. After that opening night debacle.
You know what? Can I throw a curveball in here? Because
no.
I personally don't have a hot take after game one in Houston, but I did get
serious?
A text message from a friend of the podcast, Sam Esfandiari, who is a noted Warriors fan, and he said, prediction, Chris Paul will hate James Harden by the end of the year in the same way we all expected would happen last season, and next summer Paul will be traded to the Lakers for young guys and cap space. And I, you know, that's not the worst theory in the world.
That's
it makes
a really
sense
good
for
theory
a variety of reasons, right?
It's a really good theory. I'm so disappointed you don't want to go in on the Rockets. This is your time. What's holding you back? Why don't you want to overreact to what I said, it was a debacle.
Because here's the thing, and I'm coming at this from the perspective of a true Rockets hater who knows deep down that it would be too easy for them to just lay down and finish in like sixth place this year. Like they're going to find a way to win 55 games and be at the top of the West and just force us to take them seriously or pretend to take them seriously for the next 8 months, because that's just the way it goes. I will say, I was taken aback by how flat everyone looked. And maybe it was just one game. And, you know, a lot of people on Twitter were blaming Carmelo. It's just the whole team didn't have a whole lot of bounce. Even guys like Clint Capella and people who are supposed to be athletic, like the Pelicans just made that whole roster look slow.
No doubt. I mean, New Orleans punched really hard right out of the gate, and they just weren't ready for it. They kept thinking that they were going to be able to shoot their way back in the game, and they just didn't. I mean, they missed a ton of threes, and I'm sure that will balance out. But I also think, like, the scariest moment of opening week for me was when I was sitting there watching Houston thinking, man, these guys really need Brandon Knight healthy. Like,
yeah.
Like Michael Carter-Williams out there shrinking the court, Melo. We've had like three straight summers of just like increasingly indignant Melo. Does he watch himself play basketball? Like, I do not understand how he like gives the quotes that he gives about how, you know, coming off the bench is an adjustment when he's out there just looking awful. And so that's already looking like a, you know, a potential zero, you know, in terms of what they're trying to do going forward. I mean, ultimately it comes down to the trio of Harden, Paul, and Capella. All three of those guys can definitely play a lot better than they did on opening night. I'm with you that they're going to be fine, but I also think, and I've said this to you before about some other teams, when you have that dream season, to have the same level of night-to-night consistency and energy the following year, it's really hard to sustain. Even if you're not coming off of a title or anything else, it's just hard to get that locked in for that long. And I'm a little worried that, you know, Houston, the regression that we expected, you know, maybe a little bit deeper than we thought, just because they don't have a lot to prove here in November and December to themselves, right? Like last year, they really had to prove that, you know, their formula was going to be sort of championship quality, right? And now they just are kind of believing it, and we'll see if they, you know, they come back around to it. But scary first night for anyone who's thinking like, oh, Houston's going to be able to survive the Ariza thing. They're going to just like keep on rolling. That's not how it went.
Yeah, man. I mean, the MCW minutes, I thought I was hallucinating. And Melo is, he's such an easy target at this point.
But he deserves it, though. Come on, don't back this guy.
I'm not. It's hard to watch him out there, though, because this is, honest to God, like these final few years are going to affect the way people think about his career. And watching him, like, on defense last night, my only takeaway was like, God, I understand you can't retire because you're making like a ridiculous amount of money. No, he got bought out. He should just retire. Like, this is, keep your dignity intact, Melo, because this is rough. It's hard to watch as someone who at least nominally wants to defend him, because when he's out there, they're vulnerable.
It's always dangerous when I bring up the NFL, but wasn't there an NFL player recently who just like retired at halftime?
Yes.
is that in play for Melo? Like, would you bet against it at this point? Like, could there be a game in mid-January where he's just like, all right, I'm done. Can I get a ride home on the private plane and then I'll just see you guys later? is that possible?
Like, if that happens, I will be the first one to applaud him for choosing the hard right over the easy wrong, which is, I guess, just continuing to kind of play this string out.
That would be pretty funny if, like, Dwayne Wade has, like, a season-long last dance and Melo just, like, walks out the side exit.
I'm out. and Melo's going to be great in retirement. I'm sure he'll be great on TV. He's got a great future ahead of him, and maybe it's time to head that direction. And talk about, like, massive overreactions. After one game, both you and I are saying Melo needs to retire.
I've been saying that since 2015, probably, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Let's talk about New Orleans, though, because you're right. We've been hard on them, not only their roster, we've been hard on their franchise. You know, is Davis going to get traded? They have to trade him. They can't ever put anything around him. They had the best game of anybody in the entire league, right? I mean, didn't they have the best opener performance? I mean, 131 points. They got to their pace exactly right. Davis was unstoppable. And you mentioned Peyton. You know, if I was a Lakers fan, I would be watching that game a little bit nervous because Anthony Davis made Peyton look amazing. And Peyton was making a lot of the same kinds of passes that Rondo was making last year. And with Davis, all you have to do is, like, You don't have to be a pinpoint accurate passer with Anthony Davis. You just put it within like 8 feet of him and like within 5 feet of the rim. Anywhere in that vicinity, he goes and gets it and finishes it, and you get credit for the assist. So smooth transition for Peyton. He did a nice job of keeping their tempo right. And then Etuan Moore had a big night. Yeah. Randall looked sensational, I thought. And the fits there were frankly better than I expected, you know, right out of the gate between their three bigs. So I don't know, like if I was a Pelicans fan, that's like your title, you know, like go wild, like just celebrate this, you know, it might not get better than this.
Well, yeah, I'm actually glad you mentioned the radius that Anthony Davis gives to anybody who's throwing him an alley-oop, because it's true, and it was exacerbated last night against Houston because he was dealing with a lot of switches against their defense where it was Anthony Davis versus like PJ Tucker or Eric Gordon, and the Rockets just didn't have a prayer. And so we got to watch AD just murder those guys all night. But he makes it so easy for his teammates. And then anytime the defense would collapse on him, like he did a great job finding shooters and getting guys wide open looks. So it was just a really impressive night for him. And this is something I've mentioned a couple times on the podcast over the last couple months. Like I do think he's in that category with KD, with LeBron, with Steph, of guys who absolutely have a claim to being the best player on earth. The Pelicans part of this, I'm not sure how much I trust from last night, because the question for them is always going to be their wings. And nobody is debating that, like, if they get a huge night from Etuan Moore and from Nikola Mirotic, like, they're going to be in great shape. The question is how consistently those guys are going to be able to give you great nights. And Mirotic, like, played really well down the stretch last year. If he can keep this going and if this is the real guy, I think they'll be in really good shape.
Let me put a twist on the question that we started with. How many games do the Pelicans have to win this year for you to be convinced that Anthony Davis is the best player in the league?
Oh, 57, let's say.
Man, you read my mind. That was the same number, like down the exact same number I was thinking. So what are the odds they get there?
Like, I don't see it happening because of the wings, because I don't trust too many people on their roster. And look, I wrote about it for today. The Anthony Davis trade questions are going to be there all year long, and it's going to be really strange to watch AD kind of establish himself as this super elite, best of the best player, definitely like clear MVP candidate. And every night, every time I watch him, I'm like, man, I wonder if this is going to be happening on the Lakers next year or the Celtics. And there's a whole kind of butterfly effect to his future that is going to be at the center of the league all year.
Andrew, can we just take this season to appreciate Anthony Davis in this style of play that they've finally figured out without having to worry about these trade concerns? Look. Can't we just appreciate the beauty? Like, you're over here trying to blow them up, and I just want to sit in the museum of the Pelicans and stare at these gorgeous, you know, pictures they're painting every single night. They figured out how to play with them.
Fair enough. That's such an easy take, though, okay? Because the reality is that most
it's a reality-based take. That's,
no. Look, every Pelicans fan is going to applaud you, and every NBA fan is going to say, you're right. We should do that.
No, I don't do this for popular opinion, Andrew. I'm not trying to score points here. I'm trying to change the way you view the NBA. And look, like, we can imagine what Anthony Davis would look like in a Lakers uniform 3 years down the road. I'm sure you're trying to put him on the Celtics because that's your favorite team now, but they're on to something here. And if I was him, this is not the same as the Cousins thing last year. Like, I came out of the gate with the same thing you just said, which is, you know, Cousins should not be loyal to New Orleans. Yeah. The fit is not that great. He should get out of there. And people, of course, got really angry with me early last season. That proved to be true. But they weren't building around Cousins. They didn't have the right system to, like, pull the best out of Cousins. They hadn't, like, kind of unlocked the best way for him to play. I think New Orleans and Alvin Gentry are starting to get there. You know, like, if you can just plug and play an Elfrid Payton and you don't skip a beat because Davis is finally getting up and down the court and he knows how to read defenses, and he knows where to get the ball, and you're doing it consistently night in, night out, and he's putting up 32, 16, 8, 3, and 3. Andrew, I don't need to think about him picking, you know, trade scenario. I don't need to go to the trade machine. I just want to watch these games.
Okay, you're right. I would add that I think a lot of rival teams and rival fan bases are going to be experiencing his season differently, and they're not wrong either. But I am all for watching Anthony Davis on this Pelicans team and seeing how crazy it can get, because like he does, he puts up numbers where you're like, this is Hakeem Olajuwon shit. Like, how is this real? It's video game stats, and we'll see, because he's gonna have to be incredible to really give them a chance in the middle of the West there. But I think you can probably do it.
Just enjoy me. Join me at the museum, Andrew. All right, just pull up a seat here. We're just gonna, like, you know, take in this beauty very slowly. We're not gonna rush ahead to the future. Okay.
Yeah, you are the type of person to go to an actual Pelican museum. But
if home is there one, I would be there so fast.
Moving on, Drew says, after one game against Boston, I feel like the Sixers are never going to be able to work past the decision to take Markelle Fultz over Jason Tatum. Is there any hope? I hear you on Sixers patience generally. They're probably going to be really good. But where are you with Fultz at this point?
I hate watching him play. I mean, just point blank. That's where I'm at with him. And maybe he can win back my heart, you know, at some point. I thought he was a really interesting college player.
Yeah.
But every step along the way, not playing in summer league, that aggravated me to no end. I just think granting him this starting spot, he hasn't earned it. I mean, there's no way he's earned that starting spot in practice. And then, you know, it's almost like you're babying him, trying to make him feel like he's really important, but you're not going to make him feel important enough that he gets to keep the starting spot in the second half. So, you know, it's almost like they're treating him like, you know, a little kid, like, oh, congratulations, kind of like patting him on the head with the positive reinforcement. I don't like that. I mean, I understand he's really important to their franchise, but treat him like any other player. Make him earn it. He certainly hasn't done that. The first night, shot selection, blah, you know, he looks afraid out there still at times. I mean, is there a bigger contrast in self-confidence than watching Tatum and Fultz on the same court at the same time? I mean, come on.
It's really tough. I mean, the Tatum thing would drive me insane if I were a Sixers fan. And granted, at the time, like, most of the Sixers fans I know would have clowned Colangelo had he stood pat at three and tried to take Tatum, although like the Celtics probably would have taken Tatum at one in that scenario, but it would have been a real issue.
Yeah, and to be clear, I'm not writing Fultz off forever. I'm not even going down the route of, like, let's, you know, kill Philly for that trade.
No,
I'm just saying right now it is really hard to watch.
Yeah,
what does he bring to the table? He's not bringing anything positive, and I just don't like the treatment of it. Right, they already gave him an entire redshirt year.
Yeah,
they didn't make him play summer league. They're giving him all this special, you know, dispensation, basically, of like, hey, we're gonna treat you different. And how is he repaying him for that? He's afraid to shoot three pointers, and he wants to take mid-range 12 footers that are contested off the dribble. Come on.
Yeah, man. And I actually appreciate your honesty, because I feel exactly the same way. This is really tough to watch. And I think part of that is most of the time we watch players go through some sort of nightmarish struggle. When we watch them on the other side, we're generally watching them redeem themselves, because the players who can never put it all back together generally never make it back to the spotlight. But with Fultz, we're watching him try to put it back together on national television, and there are moments when he's out there and it's hard not to wonder whether it just isn't going to happen for him. And that's really depressing, because he seems like a good guy. I spent time with him and his family when he was entering the draft, but it's tough.
His career was going great until you did that story on him, and it's just it's really been downhill. We all know. But can I just put it this way? I'm not a Sixers fan. I don't think I'm that hard on the Sixers either. I mean, of course, we went after them a little bit for the Colangelo, you know, tweet fest and all that, but I just think more than anything, I am Team Ben. Like, and part of it is because, you know, you tried to punch him at training camp a couple years ago, and it came to It got very dicey there, but I really believe in Ben Simmons' Hall of Fame potential, right? I'm all in. I think you can build an amazing offense around him as the number one guy. So I'm not quite to like Ben Inc. status like I am with Giannis, but I'm getting there. And sure. So I look at everything that Philly does through the lens of, does this guy make Ben's life easier? Does he make Ben better? Is he basically fitting into the framework of a Ben-led Sixers team, right? And I realize Embiid's still, you know, the captain there, the biggest personality and all of that. But I think ultimately Philly is going to go as far as Simmons takes them, I think, you know, this year and beyond. And Markel has not shown me anything to believe that he is going to be one of these guys who's going to really help Ben Simmons in the long term. And I hope he turns it around. I hope he rediscovers his full confidence in his shot. I hope he can, you know, trust his three-pointers off the dribble, because that's such an amazing weapon that he had at one point. But right now, it's just like, man, you're just holding people back. You're just, you know, crunching the court around Simmons. Just put Redick out there. It just seems obvious.
Can I push back on one point, though? I do think it's healthy for the Sixers to start him for the first 2 to 3 months of the season. Like, maybe start him until Christmas, just so you can find out what you have and there can be no illusions about what Fultz really is. Because I think as an organization, that's just going to be really important to what they want to do. Like, if Fultz isn't the guy, it's better to get everybody on the same page as quickly as possible. So, you know, we need to go find a guard who can work next to Ben Simmons, because there's a chance that he could be that guy. But we're like, the longer you wait, the longer the whole organization is kind of in purgatory.
When you introduce people to your wife, do you say, this is my wife, or do you say, this is my girlfriend, right? You say, this is my wife, right?
Sure.
7 days a week. There's not like two of the three or three of the days of the week, like Wednesday, Sunday, and Monday, you call her your girlfriend. She's your wife.
Right.
They've got Fultz as a starter in the first half and a bench player in the second half. Isn't that the most halfway committed thing you've ever heard? Wouldn't Alice be offended if you treated her that way? Like, yo, like, you're my wife when we go to dinner with my parents, but, you know, at the movies, you're just my girlfriend. Come on, man.
Yeah, that's fair. It is certainly half-assed in Philadelphia, but I still feel like it's a healthy step for them to give him as many real opportunities as they can before they make a decision there. And look, in all likelihood, they're going to get to January and Fultz is not going to be a meaningful contributor, but perfect. At least they'll know what he is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, at least they'll have ruined the first 3 months of their season. Let me ask you this. Can we flip this around? Imagine you were Fultz and Brett Brown, who's this incredibly nice, kind, straight-shooting man, incredibly smart, coach of the year candidate every year. Brett Brown comes to you and is like, Markel, here's our plan. You're going to start for us, but only for the first half. You're going to come off the bench in the third quarter. Aren't you offended? You're like, wouldn't you feel like you're a charity case? I mean, how do you take it?
I mean, how I personally take it is, now I know that every time I watch the Sixers start a third quarter with JJ Redick out there, I'm going to be thinking of me introducing Alice, my wife, as like my girlfriend with these friends and my wife with these friends. So yeah, look, it's a powerful analogy, and it's clear that the Sixers have some things to work out. But
if I was him, at some point, don't you go to the coach and just be like, bro, if I shouldn't start, don't start me, you know? And I think that would be the vet move here.
Yeah,
for Markel Fultz, but he's not a vet. You know, he seems incredibly young. Borderline immature in terms of how he carries himself, you know, especially at Summer League, dancing around in the back of the cameras, being all goofy, you know. And I think that before too long, if this doesn't go better, we need to get the report, you know, from whoever the Sixers insider is, that Markel Fultz went into Brett Brown's office and said, let me just come off the bench. I think that would be the right thing to do if he's not able to step his game up shortly.
Yeah, it's a tough situation for him and for Brett Brown. But moving to the other side of that matchup from Tuesday night, Matt says, on a recent pod, Andrew said there was no question the Celtics will make the finals. Don't you think that's kind of overselling it? They certainly have as many really good players as anyone in the league, but they also don't have a consensus top 10 player. And if you go by Ben's list, no one in the top 15. Can a team without a truly elite star really be considered a foregone conclusion to win three playoff rounds when they haven't done it before? Ben, so this question is from a couple weeks ago, but I saved it because it's part of what I find so interesting about this Celtics team. And I wrote a lot about Kyrie in a story this week, which, by the way, it was pretty awesome to have three cover stories with you, me, and Rob Mahoney. That was a great look for the Top 100 podcast. Did you have any thoughts on that?
How many copies did you buy? You got like 25 over there?
I'm in the process, Mr. Massachusetts. For the record, I was originally supposed to write the Thunder story, but then logistics got complicated, and so I switched to Boston. But it's perfect. It was fate. I always dreamed that my first cover story would be Al Horford and Gordon Hayward.
Yeah. Well, how did the process go for you? I mean, let's inside baseball here. I mean, what was the – were you feeling the pressure? I mean, were you nervous? Did it come together easily? Was it like pulling teeth? I mean, a cover story, that's the Lee Jenkins territory, right? I mean, how'd it go?
Yeah, I mean, it was really enjoyable. I liked the people up in Boston a lot, and those – like. Danny Ainge was really good and gave me like 20, 25 minutes. And I talked to Horford for a long time. And honestly, I wasn't sure which way I wanted to take it. And then I got up to Boston and I ended up writing a lot about Kyrie just because he seemed like the most fun challenge. And I talked to him for a little while as well. And it's funny because Kyrie last season like didn't really want to do interviews ever, but he seems to be in a better place this year and he was more talkative. So he kind of talked about how tough it was last season. You can kind of tell he still is not in a great place with LeBron, and so like half of what he says kind of feels like a subtweet to Bron, and maybe that's more the way we read it, but it was interesting. And I think like part of the story with the Celtics is gonna be like, can Kyrie be that guy who gives them those elite skills? Because, you know, I think he may not be top 10 if you're ranking on overall value over the course of 9 months. But if you're looking for guys who can take over the fourth quarter of playoff games and kind of carry the offense through that those stretches when everything breaks down, like, I would put Kyrie in the top 5 or 6. Like, I would rather have Kyrie playing point guard in the fourth quarter of a playoff game than Russell Westbrook.
Well, you know, hopefully he doesn't get overshadowed by Tatum this year.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because looking ahead here, we all know the Celtics are really deep and will probably be deep enough to win 60 games regardless of whether they have an elite like scorer who's top 10 or checks whatever box you're looking for. But like, I think Kyrie could be that guy and really scares the Warriors. But Tatum, man, I was blown away by how good he looked on opening night.
I mean, I didn't like him talking trash or winking at Embiid after, like, luckily banking in that pull-up.
Of course you didn't.
That was a bridge too far for me, but he looked really good. I mean, what do you think? Guys like him, Donovan Mitchell, Ben Simmons, are those going to be first-time All-Stars this year, the three of those guys?
Tatum really might be, and Simmons should be as well. Donovan Mitchell, it's hard to imagine. The West is just so deep. It feels like it takes every star out there an extra couple years to make their first All-Star game, because that's just the way it goes.
There's a path, though, don't you think? I mean, if they're the 2 or 3 seed, he's going to get on. The coaches will reward their success, don't you think?
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I hadn't really thought that much about it, but he's going to be in that mix. He's going to be averaging like 20 and 7, and
well, I've spent
the Jazz
hours
are gonna be really good.
Hours upon hours thinking about these crucial topics. I think he's got a chance, and I think Tatum does too.
Well, and the Tatum thing really changes things for me. I don't want to overreact to one game, but if he can be a legit go-to guy by the time they get to May, that changes the way I would think about a Celtics Warriors matchup. And he, like, because basically the reason to pick the Warriors without even thinking about it is the Celtics just don't have enough firepower to hang with those guys over 7 games. But if Tatum is going to be an elite scorer alongside Kyrie, then, you know, it gets kind of interesting. Do you see any of that?
I mean, I'm not ready to say they're going to push Golden State. I still think KD is going to baptize all of Boston's wings in the finals. I mean, I think it's going it's going to be a real rude awakening for them. But it's also the kind when you're writing that Jason Tatum story, like, you know, getting punked by KD in the 2019 finals to, like, set up a decade of success.
That's true.
It's a pretty good first chapter.
And also, KD punking the Celtics wings would be so much more impressive than KD punking whoever Cleveland was throwing out there.
Jeff Green.
Totally. Jeff Green, Seti Osman. Yeah, I don't know. I just think the Celtics are going to be able to beat the crap out of Steph Curry, and they're going to be really deep to where there's not really going to be any breaks against this team. And if they have a couple guys they can go to at the end of games, it's gonna be interesting with Golden State.
Yeah, I mean, my Boston take from opening night, though, I've called them a cute story for years. They're no longer a cute story. When your two leading guys, or two of your leading guys, and Kyrie and Hayward both shoot as miserably as they did, you win comfortably against a team that could be in the Eastern Conference Finals in Philly. Your defense holds Philly under 90. And even though Simmons and Embiid are both playing really well, you've got them, you know, fairly well in check, and you're winning comfortably throughout that game. Their depth is crazy. They can beat you in so many different ways, and they don't put that much pressure on any one individual player to do it. There's so much support at every spot, right? And the fact that they can close games without Kyrie, like if they're protecting a lead, you know, or, you know, that's what they did on opening night anyways. I'm not sure if they're going to do that all the time, but they've just got a lot of different looks, and it was very impressive to behold. I just remember I asked you a few weeks ago, like, did you come away from, you know, being around the Celtics feeling like this was a super team, or this was a team that could win 60+? I realized, at the risk of overreacting to game one, that's what they look like on opening night. They look like a 60+ win team.
Totally. And you know what was crazy about opening night is, and you kind of alluded to this, but they never were really playing that well, and yet they were in control the entire time. And the other thing that I would add is that I really like all those guys personally. Like, it was fun to talk to everybody, but watching the Celtics on opening night and watching them kind of take over, watching that crowd go crazy, It reminded me how much I don't enjoy, like, Celtics success, because I definitely started to roll my eyes when people were rhapsodizing about their depth and the sacrifices and everything else. But, like, we're going to be dealing with that all year, because I do feel like they're going to win, like, 65 games.
There's a very good chance that that's how this plays out. I mean, I was kind of watching, like, okay, let's see how we can nitpick. Like, the nitpicking was Kyrie did not shoot well, and Hayward didn't look great, and boy, a lot got made out of his two pull-up jumpers from the mid-range, right? Like, wow, what a great start. Like, but, I mean, those things are going to work it out. We know who Kyrie is, and, you know, Hayward, they have all the time in the world to bring him back. There's just no rush.
Yeah, and you know what else? I don't know if I will ever be more wrong about a draft prospect than I was wrong about Jason Tatum, because I truly expected, like, Rudy Gay part two from him, and that dude is just awesome, and it's kind of shocking. And again, if I were a Sixers fan, watching him play that way would give me, like, a mental breakdown.
Well, what about the Lakers? Can you imagine if Tatum and Ingram were your wings, and Lonzo wasn't in the picture? I mean, that's a squad. Oh, dude.
Yup, it's tough. And he grew up idolizing Kobe, too, which is perfect for Lakers fans. They love that shit. Moving on, Rajko said, please discuss this tweet on the next pod. And Ben, you've been out west, so you probably missed the whole G League thing. But I tweeted at one point today, the NBA can invest in G League infrastructure, but I bet most one-and-done players would tell you their 1 year in college was really important to their development, and probably a lot healthier than minor league life would be. And I caught some heat for that take on Twitter, because Twitter is literally the last place on earth anyone should say something positive about college sports. But for the record, I do know of a couple high-profile guys who have said privately that if players could enter the draft out of high school, they would have had to go, but they're happy that they got to go to a year of college first. Do you have any thoughts on the G League news where they're going to be paying up to $125,000 a year to high school grads?
You know, we have the internet out here too, Andrew. I know it's... You might have heard of it.
Well, you were off the grid. I was texting you about the podcast, and I didn't hear anything, so who knows?
Okay, well...
I figured you were doing your Ranger Rick thing in the Pacific Northwest.
All right, well, I have the internet. I saw the news. I saw your tweet. I didn't think it was that controversial. I do think it's a case-by-case basis, though, and there's lots of guys who would need, who either would feel like they need to get paid or would just want to be on their own. But let's not... I think the real thing to focus on is how rough the G League existence is rather than like the how annoying college can be, right? Because then there's a lot of attention to like, oh, guys go to school for 4 months and they just start to prepare for the draft, right? Like that is the case for, you know, a select handful of guys. But you also have pretty good accommodations. You're the big man on campus. You get to play in the tournament. There are benefits to the college experience. Personally, I don't think that any big level player should be forced to go to college. But... I can see why a lot of them would like it. I think I would have the same mentality that Ben Simmons did personally, but it's not a worthless experience. You look at the G League, everyone in the G League is trying to get out immediately. Like that is the mentality basically across the board. There's no coaches who want to be lifelong G League coaches. There's no GMs of G League teams who want to be lifelong G League GMs. The players aren't trying to like just fashion a long-term steady career with, you know, the Stockton Kings or whatever. Like they're trying to make moves, right? And that is a really tough spot to be thrown into as a 17 or 18 year old kid.
Exactly.
And I understand the desire to want to get paid and to, you know, get paid over the table, like, you know, not in this shady manner the way that college basketball operates now. So I think it's great that there's, you know, options. But I don't think that there's going to be a flood of these guys going the G League route.
Yeah, I think ultimately the majority of big-time players will still go to college because college affords you more exposure and, frankly, less challenges. And some of what you described is very real in the G League where, like, you're going against grown men who will probably resent you the second you show up and will be looking to kind of put you in your place.
And they won't pass to you. They're not going to build the offense around you. You're just a guy. Whereas, you know, Coach K is trying to, like, you know, make you the star of his recruiting class and, like, you know, cater to you and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think the conversation around some of this stuff lacks that nuance sometimes because it is really important to remember how challenging the G League route can be. And it's not a given that funneling kids into the minor leagues would actually be best for the players. But I think you're right too to mention that like it would be the best option for some players, and it's a good thing to have more options for everybody.
Do you remember, like, you know, when we had the straight to, you know, preps to pros was legal, you know, so guys could just come to the NBA? A lot of the owners and a lot of the players, especially the guys who washed out, like their big takeaway was like, we didn't have enough support in place to like help these guys become professionals. They were so much younger than their teammates. They kind of just got left behind or they felt like outsiders. And, you know, we didn't know how to sort of manage their growth and their maturity and all of that. That's with NBA budgets, right? That's with like making money hand over fist, like giving these guys $1 million contracts and like having them ready to go and be really important pieces, like building blocks, right? So now you subtract that down to a G League budget and you face the same challenges 15 years later. Why are you going to have the support structure down there necessary to solve those same types of inherent problems that they were dealing with year after year during the preps to pros era? I don't know.
Well, yeah. And also, I mean, you're right to bring up the experience everyone had 15 years ago, because people who are actually in this world think it's a bad idea to lower the age limit to 18 and just have this flood of kids coming in, because, like, again, people who are at these schools, and I'm talking more about scouts who operate in this world, will tell you like that emotional maturity is really important, and college like helps kids transition. That's like a very much an old man take.
No, but not
I
at all.
It's a pretty real thing.
Let's have a crystal clear example. What does Fultz look like if he comes from high school to the G League, right? I mean, he's already struggled with this transition to the NBA, but do you think he succeeds as well in the G League environment as he did playing Pac-12 basketball?
No, and all this stuff is so mainstream now that, like, you know, De'Aaron Fox would have had to go pro right out of high school, and a lot of elite prospects like Malik Monk would have been 165 pounds trying to hang against G Leaguers or NBA guys if they take away the age limit. And like, it's a lot to ask of kids like that. The one other idea I heard today that I really liked was the idea of going with this NBA plan or the G League plan to pay $125,000 a year to elite high school prospects, but putting all the one and dones on the same G League team for the year before they're draft eligible, and putting that G League team in Seattle and letting them all kind of develop together, and putting like infrastructure in place that specializes in helping them adjust. And it would be sort of like the same way the G League puts together a G League summer league team. That was an idea from my friend Dan, and I think that's kind of great. That's the one way this could work.
Well, Dan's trying to make a G League version of like Oak Hill Academy, but I think unfortunately kind of what would happen is it would turn into Lord of the Flies or like Survivor. If you have all those guys competing for Shy, there's not going to be very many assists with that team, okay? It's going to be lots of one-on-one.
Okay, that's fair, but I'm imagining Lord of the Flies with like some random 18-year-old thrown in among like all Pac-12 guards and stars who are like a hair away from the NBA who are just going to beat the crap out of them. But either way, it's a work in progress. It is the most important point is that it's good to have more options for kids. I still think college is a healthier choice though.
Yeah, I mean, it's an imperfect option. I think it's probably the best of the imperfect options, but let's encourage these guys to try it, man. Why not? Like, let's get some test cases, as long as it's not us, right?
I just don't understand why kids can't sign endorsement deals while they're in college, because the money is so clearly there. The Adidas trial has been so shady and ridiculous. Just put that money above board, and everything suddenly starts to make a lot more sense. But that's been clear for 15 years, and we still haven't changed that rule. So, all right, finishing up here, Kyle says, I want to make sure that Bradley Beal's pregnancy weight gain does not get lost amid the regular season tip-off madness. Did you see that article about the Wizards players adapting to pregnancies?
I did. Just tread carefully, okay? Just be careful with what you say here.
Look, I'm not here to get anyone in trouble or get myself in trouble, but that was an incredible article. It was written by Candace Buckner of the Washington Post, and I'm at the age when some of my friends are starting to have babies, and so they're all going through a lot of the same things Beal and Austin Rivers are going through, and then Jan Mahinmi at the end. I think he might be slander-proof for life after hearing him talk about his daughters at the end of that article. But it was my favorite piece of preseason content from anywhere in the NBA.
Well, I give you 24 hours because the Wizards play tonight, and we'll see how the slander-proof status for Jan Mahinmi works. But yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, as far as sympathy weight, for people who did not read the article, Beal admits in there that there were several months last season where all he and his girlfriend were eating was pizza and ice cream night after night, and Beal says he gained 20 pounds, which I'm not even mad. Like, that's amazing. Only the Wizards could have a professional athlete who admits to gaining sympathy weight during a pregnancy, and it's perfect. And again, yeah, I'm proud of my team staying on brand at all times, even during pregnancies.
Did John Wall put on 20 pounds of sympathy weight too?
See, that's what I was wondering. I was not going to make a John Wall joke. I thought that was what you were warning me about at the outset.
It was exactly what I was warning you about, but you were just beating around the bush. So look, cheap laughs. Okay, I apologize in advance.
There we go. I'm feeling good going into this Miami game. And actually, I've got my guard up as well, because Miami's on the second night of a back-to-back. They lost to the Magic last night, and that's dangerous. I'm worried about a bounce-back game here. But the last email from Ali, he says, "My wife and I are currently on an outdoor adventure in Morocco. There probably isn't time for this email on your podcast during the first week of NBA, but I'm sure Ben would agree there is always time to share stories about nature. Oh. Anyways, if nothing else, I just wanted to share some of my experiences with a fellow outdoor enthusiast. My wife and I flew 26 hours from New Zealand to Morocco.
Oh my God.
The next day, we started a three-day trek through the Atlas Mountains, and we took Ben's advice to make sure our days were long and busy. At one point on the trek, I became delirious due to a combination of jet lag, altitude sickness, and sunstroke."
Look, I did not recommend that part, Andrew. I'm worried this is going to turn into like a Nigerian email scam here, where he's going to ask me to like pay his hospital bill. This is awful. But continue. Keep it going.
He continues to say, "There's nothing more humbling than being at complete mercy to Mother Nature," which is exactly the type of shit that people like you say.
I've got that tattooed across my back.
He ends by saying, "To keep myself sane, I started power ranking as many things as I could," perfect, "including basketball podcasts, league pass teams, and at my worst point, I even power ranked my friends. For the record, ranking of podcasts had Open Floor in first place, followed by the Low Post. And for league pass teams, I ranked Sixers first, Jazz second, and Andrew will be most pleased to know that his Celtics squad squeezed in third place, beating out Giannis Inc. and the Bucks. For the record, Giannis Inc. and the Bucks should definitely be above the Celtics, because again, it's not fun to watch the Celtics just dominate teams, but this is the community that we've created, Ben.
That, I mean, it brought a tear to my eye. It brought a phone call to my lawyer. It brought everything. I mean, there was a lot going on in this email. Always check weather conditions. I think that's the main takeaway here, Andrew. Like, you have to adjust your travel schedule based on local conditions. It's absolutely important, okay? Don't fly down to Florida during the middle of a hurricane. Don't put in 18-hour days, you know, trekking with camels through the Moroccan desert, you know, just like, yep. And always stay hydrated too. I mean, prehydrate, you know, drink before you go, hydrate, and then rehydrate, you know, prehydrate, hydrate, rehydrate. It's a three-step process. Make sure you're always doing that. But fantastic email. Ranking his friends, huh? So you revealed your best friend earlier on the podcast, and it wasn't me. So now I'm curious, like, how far down do I have to go on these rankings?
I don't know. You'll have to wait until the next time I'm delirious in the middle of a desert, and I will let you know. But listen,
once Mother Nature gets a hold of you and humbles you.
Exactly. Next time I'm at complete mercy to Mother Nature, I'll report in with a power ranking. But thank you to everybody who has Open Floor at the top of their podcast rankings. And Ben, it's time for me to go to Wizards Heat, and you will be at Blazers Lakers later tonight, Thursday night. And we'll check in next week, when I kind of have a feeling the Lakers are going to be 0-2 and people are going to be like, what the hell is wrong with this team? But we'll see.
That sounds perfect. And let's just bury this, you know, deep at the end of the podcast. Shout out to the Phoenix Suns for a nice opening night victory. I mean, for once, Andrew, they don't have to issue refunds. Devin Booker looked better than you even told me he was supposed to look. Ayton had a nice debut, at least offensively. And overall, their offense was, you know, pretty much humming under the new coach, Igor. A lot to be excited about for the 12 remaining Suns fans. I thought, you know, all things considered, given their self-inflicted damage, pretty nice opening night.
Yeah, it was a thrilling night for Team Sharp and kind of a humbling night for Team Golliver in that one.
No way.
Luka, he had a couple nice passes.
Get out of here.
Every time Luka Doncic throws a nice pass, there's like 8 million highlights. And honestly, I see it on Twitter and I'm just like, oh my God, like Luka must be incredible. And it turns out that's like the one highlight he's had all night.
You're crazy. Well, clearly you did not watch the game. Luka was fantastic throughout, showed an incredible feel. Dennis Smith Jr., not so much. Some of the other Mavericks pieces, not so much. But Luka is the real deal. It was great to see both those careers launch in pretty nice fashion. But Andrew, our listeners can email us, openfloormail@gmail.com, openfloormail@gmail.com. They can also go to Apple Podcasts or the world-famous radio.com and get their subscriptions, and also rate us, please. 5-star reviews. We really appreciate those. Andrew, until next week, I will talk to you.
All right, man.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.